church is doing. Yeah, it finally came out. Just took a minute. Yeah. It's weird.
The packet?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she had it in her drafts. She's like, oh, no, shit.
But it wouldn't open very fast. It just took a long time to open. Oh. But it's okay. I've done that. I've typed out text messages to send somebody, and I go back to send one to them 2 days later, and I never sent that one.
And they're always the important ones. I'm like, come on! Makes me mad when I do that. I've added to my checklist for the day, go look at your drafts, idiot. Before I go home. I hate that. Commissioner.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Looks like we're ready to go. It's Monday, the 13th day of October, 2025. We welcome you to our meeting. We will begin today with a prayer offered by Karsten Reed, and the pledge will, following his prayer, the pledge will be led by Sam Woodall. Amen.
Amen.
Join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you both. Let's see. We need to approve the minutes of September 22nd meeting. Is there any discussion on the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Date are we talking again?
September 22nd.
I'm going to move for approval of the minutes of our September 22nd, 2020-25 meeting.
Second that.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And then we need to approve the claims for payment from September 22nd, 2025 to October 12th, 2025.
Make a motion to approve the claims from September 22nd, 2025 to October 12th, 2025.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We'll start with our reports, and we'll turn the time over to, nice to have you, ladies. Just brighten the room.
Now Karsten doesn't have to take the whole time.
You're up, Karsten.
Morning. Just a couple quick updates. We haven't had a functional personal property software. Cindy, when she was here, really tried to make some things happen, and she sort of had partnered with Tooele County to get a personal property software that worked, and that didn't work very well. And we've had kind of a lot of issues and challenges with personal property resulting from just a lack of a functional software. The biggest problem is just they're expensive softwares, and Puma, of course, the state's software system that we're supposed to be moving to has been kind of slower to develop this personal property piece, but they are trying to get us on for January, and so the which is great because we've struggled a little bit with personal property, and I think that'll help.
We're done with this year, though, right?
Yeah. Almost done. Okay. So we'll have a functional personal property software that I think will kind of resolve a lot of issues and challenges we've had with that. The state has a new requirement for all of the assessors to receive a designation. Now there's lots of different designations, but at this point, about three quarters of our office have a designation. Just a couple more classes, and we'll have the whole office designated. The challenge with the designations is it's an increased requirement for training, which of course we can only get in Salt Lake, and so the Southern Utah assessors have asked that they have hold more classes here because, of course, our budgets have to get bigger and bigger and bigger when we're sending a whole bunch of people up to Salt Lake regularly for training. And so I think this next year we'll see more classes here so we can kind of ease that that budget challenge. So that's maybe a positive thing that the state's done. It's a funny thing to say, but anyways.
A little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
There are good things.
Our BOE numbers this year were low. Of course, the requirement is that we're 100% of market value. And sometimes, you know, when you're mass valuing, you can miss the mark. And, of course, that's why people have a right to appeal. But nevertheless, the numbers weren't very high this year in terms of appeals. And so that went really well. And as far as our budget, well, just like last year, end the year under budget for pretty much all of our line items. Yeah, and that's pretty much all I have. Do you have any questions?
Not really. Okay. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Karsten. All right. Jamie with the with the fair. Man.
Karsten looked pretty good. Hello. So this year we welcome two new employees to our team again. They've been great, and they played an important role in making the fair a success this year. Overall, the Iron County Fair was very successful. We implemented several new procedures and streamlined many of our operations, which helped us run a little more efficiently. Surveys were also sent out to all of our participants that participated in all the different events this year, and we're getting quite a few of those surveys back, and it's really good to hear their feedback on the pros and what we could do to improve it next time. So we've never sent surveys out to any of the participants before, and it was good to see, to have some of those comments come back. So the Fair Master Plan is nearing completion. Once finalized, we'll begin moving forward with planning and implementing the different phases as the budget and time allows with that. During the fair, we also displayed the proposed master plan in the exhibit building and had that displayed for the public to see, and we also had a survey there that they could take, and we had a lot of feedback on that, and we received really good engagement with that and comments from the community. So we're currently brainstorming our theme for the next year. And so we hope to have that theme ready by January 1st of February. And then we've got a couple names for Grand Marshal, but we're always looking for additional recommendations. If anybody has any recommendations for a Grand Marshal, we'd love to hear them. This year we actually implemented a new event, and it was the Boots and Buddies Adaptive Rodeo, which turned out really good. We got really good feedback on that, and so it was nice to see some of those individuals in the community be able to come out and participate in a rodeo event and learn kind of what rodeo is about. So the PRCA rodeo and our stock contractors, they're very pleased with how the rodeo continues to grow this year. We're working closely with them on ways to enhance it in the future. One major request by this stock contractor is to implement a Jumbotron and explore live streaming through the Cowboy Channel. So this would create new sponsorship opportunities and increase exposure for both Iron County and the Iron County Fair and Iron County Tourism on a national level. So Saturday night, PRCA Rodeo once again reached record attendance. We had all of our arena seats sold out by pre-show this year. So last year, it was right before the rodeo started, but all of our seats were sold out before the pre-show even started. So we just had standing room only tickets. Search and Rescue said that it was, once again, most cars that they've ever parked. They were parking them clear back by the Mudwog area. I'd really like to thank Search and Rescue and the Sheriff's Department and VIPS for their outstanding assistance throughout the fair. They are just always right there when we need them and willing to do what we need to help park those cars and keep things in order. So the same thing for the Demolition Derby, as we pretty much was sold out on that. We just had standing room only tickets available for those events. So they are growing and in need of additional seating with the amount of people that are coming to these events. So our sponsorship grew tremendously this year. We had 34 new sponsors joining us. We're especially proud to announce that the first year ever we had our two diamond sponsors. So those diamond sponsors are our $10,000 sponsors. So it's kind of nice to see that it's moving up and we're getting those higher sponsorship levels. We appreciate all of our sponsors. Each and every one of them is important to us. So we had a total of 140 sponsors this year with either in-kind donations or cash donations, and it totaled $186,000. The Spanish Child Rodeo did really good. We moved that from September to July to June this year, and it just is growing as well. So this next year we had the Equestrian Club come in. They're in the FFA group. They came in and loved being at the grounds this year, and so they've actually booked all of their events for next year already. So those booked. So
how many are those?
They have probably five or six of them each year, so it's good. Last year they did the summer games here with us. They're involved at the summer games, and so they had that Equestrian one here in, it was August is when they did, or that one was June, and then they did a regional in August for them. So I'm excited the direction the fair and fairgrounds are heading, and look forward to the continued growth and working with the community to be involved. So that's about all I've got for this one. If you have any questions.
Jamie, we appreciate you. Do a great job.
All right, thank you.
Awesome. Thank you very much. All right, Nicole. Oh, Karsten, go ahead.
I forgot to mention House Bill 237, and I'm sure if you went to UAC, maybe they brought that up. But that's the county. We now collect the entire amount from the rollback, and we have 10 years to spend it, or it goes to the state of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be used for things like open space or conservation easements. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty much you guys that have to decide how that money is allocated within 10 years, or it gets turned over to the state. Luke has the number last year for the total and rollbacks. It's a significant amount of money every year that needs to be allocated. I don't know how you're planning on, or what you're planning on getting together to do that, but there probably needs to be some correlation between the three of you to use those funds. I don't know if you want an action plan yearly or every few years, but you know, the last place we want it to go is back up there.
So conservation easements and what else?
The law says kind of an open space conservation easement. It gives kind of a very vague broad, maybe through legal they can define a little bit better. I can't remember the specifics during UAC, but the county can purchase conservation easements. It can use it for open spaces, stuff like that. But, I mean, just to give you an idea, just a recent rollback that we had, just that one was, I think, $150,000 to $200,000. So, I mean, you know, the cumulative total, I don't know what it is. Luke has those numbers, but it's probably a significant
amount. Let us put it in the general fund.
It has to be used.
Has to be used for.
So
I just we don't do that many conservation easements.
Well,
often don't fund them. Usually there's that group that
really limit what we can do with that money.
So it's just a quick Google search says that it's for agricultural land, the preservation of open and agricultural land, and that's an increase from the 20% that we used to keep to 100%.
Yeah.
about conservation easements, open and agricultural land preservation. It doesn't really clarify what that means. Wildlife habitat.
Yeah.
Cultural or recreational use or watershed protection.
So,
I think there's probably some overlap there within the spirit of Greenbelt to accomplish.
Well, if it's watershed protection, right. We could use it maybe for that NRCS project.
Well, it's going to be a lot of money and the
right.
But I think we ought to look into whether make sure that is kosher. But yeah.
Can you ask Luke about that?
About the amount?
Well, if we can do it for watershed, I mean, we're looking at that NRCS project on Club Creek. Our match is going to be like $2 million.
Yeah.
And that's significant for agriculture, for culinary.
You might just want to have it as a running agenda item.
You listening? How much we got and what's our limit?
So it was 20% of rollback for Greenbelt that we were collecting the last 2 years. That new bill changed it to 100% this year. And so we have $340,000 so far that we have in that account.
Do we know what our match on that NRCS project is?
It's like $2 million. It's about isn't that about $2 million, that match?
It's 1.8.
Yeah.
Some of it can be in kind. Usually with NRCS, yes, it can be in kind.
Maybe some, I don't know. But
like I say, that might get us pretty close.
That'd be awesome. Can you talk to Rich Wilson when he gets back? I think he's out of town, but maybe call him and ask him about that if we can. That'd be a good chunk towards that.
Yeah, like Carson said, the bill's kind of vague on exactly what it can be used for, but if we could use it for something like that, that'd be big.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate you bringing that up. Nicole?
I'm up.
Thank you, madam.
Pretty helpful. Have your handouts. Have my school teacher moment.
Thank you.
So welcome.
Oh. Okay. So we'll do our handouts first. So the first page is just our product sales, which just shows, of course, what we've collected so far this year. So just over $17 million, but of course, we're approaching our magical time. We just sent the tax roll to the printer on Friday and billed out over $64 million. So we will be super busy the next couple of months trying to get that all collected. So our numbers will go up significantly. And the next one is just tax distribution. That is just what comes to the county. So we're at $288.8 million. But of course, over the next 2 months, that will go up significantly also. And then the third one is our product sales, just shows all of the funds in our cash and in our bank accounts. And so we're doing really well with our cash, and our funds are all in really good shape. So all of that's looking really good. The PTIF interest rate is still holding pretty dang good. The last time I reported it was 4.47, and it's at 4.38. So that really helps us. In our PTIF, we have gained like $1.9 million just in interest this year. And in our Morton investment, it's like $900,000, so we've done really well with our interest this year, so we're super great, and that really helps our funds. Our outstanding, before we billed taxes out, was around $2 million, but now we're $65 million, so we have a lot of work to get going, and of course, sending out tax notices, it'll probably be in the next 10 days. And that really ups everybody's burden in the courthouse. Everybody gets lots of extra phone calls, so I'll just tell them I'm really sorry right now. But Carson's office gets a lot of value calls. We get a lot of address changes, a lot of work for the recorder. So just keeps us all super busy. And my budget is doing real well, of course. this is the time of year when I spend my budget, so we'll hope I budgeted wisely, because I never know. It's like a whole year in advance, and I never know if our envelope costs are going up or our notice costs are going up, so we'll hope we're good there. But I know I'm short and sweet today, so any questions? Were you're good?
No.
Okay,
good report, thank you. Appreciate it. Right, I'm not seeing.
Let's see. I just wanted to report back. Carrie is still on the mountain. Okay. And let's see if I heard from Jared. Like I say, he's got a new grandbaby. No, nothing from Jared yet. I wasn't sure if he was going to send Josh Meredith or not. But.
Why don't we go to you, Mr. Robinson?
Okay. Had a busy couple of weeks, a lot of meetings. Started off at the end of last time we had commission meeting. We had the Forest Service meeting that afternoon, and went over their plans for watershed management and hopefully getting some logging going on those and contracts going out on those. They have I don't have my notes from that meeting. Mike, do you have your notes on how many acres they had on that?
I don't. They had maps and everything else. I didn't keep my notes.
They're being proactive on that and looking to do a lot of contracts for timber to be let out. So that was it. That was great to hear and see. And hopefully they'll move forward with that and get that industry going again. Also in that meeting, the DWR talked about some wild hog issues down in Washington County, invasive hogs coming up from the Virgin River and moving up the Santa Clara River.
Never heard of that.
And it's open game. You can just take them out when you see them. Wow. So that's something I'm going to look to do in November and December. Spend a little time down in the southern part of the state, and hopefully.
So they're along the Santa Clara River?
Mm-hmm. Have a little roast pig? Yeah, I don't know how tasty they would be, but sure would be fun to sling a lot of lead that way. So, but that was a good meeting right after commission last time. Then we had a meeting with the fairgrounds, and there was a huge issue that came up about 100 North and Parowan City's interpretation versus Iron County interpretation of what that street would become. Parowan City was under full understanding that that would become public access back to the subdivision on the east side of town. And so I had a meeting with Mayor Halderman and Dan and expressed my concerns over that. And my thoughts are that if we need it in for a little while, possibly, but in the long term, absolutely not. That needs to be part of the fairgrounds and needs to be closed to the fairgrounds. So that's an ongoing discussion. Then this week I had a meeting with the DWR and the wildlife management area out here west of town, west of Parowan. We had meetings in June out there going over the wildlife management area and the invasion of the prairie dogs on the joining properties. And from the minutes of the original meeting when that property was purchased, the DWR was to maintain the dogs inside of their area. And this year in the trapping season, they took 597 prairie dogs off of the two neighboring farms. And so that is and I voiced that in the meeting, that is a failure on their part. They did not uphold their part of the agreement. They completely missed the mark on that. I spent some time with Mark Halderman. We went and mapped the area of his cornfield that was completely decimated by prairie dogs. It was about 6 acres. that they totally annihilated. Adams Farms, they have had damage over the last 20 years from the prairie dogs that have been placed on that farm. Mike estimates that to be well over $100,000 over the 20-year span. And so in that meeting, Rex Shipp was there. Evan was not able to make it, but I did talk to him later in the week. They both affirmed that they were going to try to get something put through the state legislature to have some compensation available to those, not necessarily to those two in alone, but to have that available to others that are having damage through prairie dogs where they are a protected species and can't do anything about it. So the DWR is going to step up. They did put up a visual fence. They did trap. They have their guys down there now shooting. This is the time of year that they can do a lethal take of them. And so they're in that area shooting, so hopefully through, I can't remember the date, I think it's through the end of October. But in that meeting, the state president of Farm Bureau and his lobbyist were there, and he approached me after the meeting about the rollback money and said, hey, you could possibly use some of that rollback money to compensate the growers that have been damaged by the prairie dogs. I would rather see it come through the state, through the state legislature, to have that to where we can hold the DWR accountable. And they're in a tight spot. I'll hand them that. They're in a tight spot. They have a federally protected species that they can't do very much with, but they have some levers that they can pull, and so I'd rather see that come through that. Also attended the Farm Bureau annual business meeting in Cedar City the other night. I got the last of that, but it's been busy.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So let's see. I spoke with Nick Hewlett, who's our new CJC director. I wasn't able to make it to the CJC advisory board meeting this last time. I had another commitment. But we discussed, and I know the sheriff's talked about this before, about every time he comes in, talks about the impact of group homes and residential treatment centers on his department. That's just a cascading effect. I mean, that affects the Children's Justice Center. It's affecting our hospital. It's just kind of a cascading effect. So we're going to target that as a discussion for the upcoming legislative session to see if there's something that we can't do about that.
I'm assuming they operate under a conditional use permit. Is there?
I don't know exactly. I don't know.
Sam,
what that is.
More of a zoning thing than a conditional use permit, just allowed use. But I'll look into that in the meantime. So.
Yeah, that's something. I mean, it's gonna. We're gonna have to sit down and kind of powwow and figure out.
Yeah.
So I've had this discussion before, and one of the things that I've been advised of is there are several members of the legislature that
own them.
So, I don't know. But it's a huge problem. I actually met with the SEA, kind of the adult high. They're actually getting so many of those kids that they're mandated to take that it's pushing seats out for our local kids out of the SEA program. It's a massive problem across the board. And just anecdotally, you know, working, I work evenings here in Parowan. I have access to all the calls in the county, and there's never a night that goes by that there isn't at least one either assault, runaway, sex offense, runaway breaking into houses. I mean, it's every
suicide.
It's every single night. Suicidal. It's every single night.
I would suggest, too, that we might be able to make a more local effort on that in terms of addressing the table of uses. And you're probably going to have to deal with grandfathered in outfits, but it might be such that, you know, that's very much a legislative decision at this level that you might be able to say, hey, you know what, table of uses, we're just not going to make that allowable anymore. It's not unheard of.
Yeah.
So you want to research that. But.
Yeah. So moving forward, we're just going to need to have kind of a combined effort to deal with that. It's, you know, when the sheriff says it's becoming prolific, and I know he had it broken down into even hours, but it's, I mean, it's absolutely the case. So, but I had a conversation with Nick about that, of the amount that it's starting to affect the Children's Justice Center. Interestingly enough, so there's nights that my wife will bring me dinner or whatever. She's the provider at WorkMed. There'll be a call for an assault at one of the group homes, and she's like, awesome, I know what my schedule is tomorrow, because then the workers will come in. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's 100% of the time. So that's something that we're going to start talking about here before the legislative session starts. Attended the quarterly fire chiefs meeting. A big topic of conversation, and we're going to hear a lot about this from George, especially in upcoming budget hearings, is the House Bill 48, Wildland Urban Interface. This appears to be a horrible piece of legislation that is horrible. Horrible.
In fact, I would suggest that if we have any political sway, we get that dog overturned. It's going to be so bad.
So I talked to Rex in length about this. I talked to Rex at length, and I talked to several other legislators over the last week about this. None of them even knew what it was. Like, they're like, we passed that? Like, yeah, you passed that.
But
so
it was hidden.
Yeah.
It was hidden back, like, on page 1,000 of the bill.
It is so bad.
They want, like, my office to collect them all.
Yeah. Basically, in a nutshell, so the Wildland Urban Interface is the WUI. The WUI is supposedly the area between the wildlands and the urban area where we need to do fire control, fire mitigation to keep the wildland fire from coming into the urban. If you look at the WUI map, basically, because downtown St. George has trees, it's in the WUI. You know, the totality of Iron County is in the WUI. But what this bill requires is for the county, all this has been pushed onto the county, to inspect every parcel that comes under the WUI every year. And then basically the county will assess fines to those people who have a tree too close to their house.
Like we're talking out the cabins and everything?
Oh, we're talking cabin. We're talking your house, my house. We're talking every property in Iron County.
Even existing ones.
They'll tell you you have a tree too close to your house.
Yep, and then we fine them. We figure that the
20 cents a square
cut it down
foot.
Or do they have a chance to cut it down before they can find or
maybe. Well, and so here's the kicker, and I'm looking at it right here, but the DNR is tasked with tightening this down and actually making the rules. They haven't done that yet, so we don't know exactly what that's going to look like in the end, but we're mandated to implement this January 1st. So,
how did this sneak through like this? Did you have input on this?
No idea.
It was kind of not on anyone's radar. You know how they'll go and give like a summary of the bills?
Uh-huh.
It was not even one of the highlights.
Who were the sponsors?
So. It was, I can tell you.
I'll be guessing.
Casey Snyder and Mikkel in the Senate.
Yeah.
So I've been working with George on this to try and get the GIS portion and the appraisal portion. Brian from the assessor's office has been helping. But, yeah, I believe the default assessment starts out at 20 cents per square foot on every level. So on my house, that'd be a $600 increase.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about this.
Right.
Not for me personally. I think.
No, I mean, across the board, it's going to, it's going to raise everybody's property tax $600 to $1,500 a year.
Yeah.
It's going to go out to every property.
Like our fire departments, I'm like, most of our fire departments are volunteers. We can't require them to do this.
Right. Well, but the language in the bill puts it specifically on the head of the county. The county has to have, we're going to be required to hire inspectors to, and what George figures in his, that we're going to have 6 full-time employees just to go out and assess properties for the WUI. And, you know, when asked about, well, however are we going to fund that? And they're like, oh, easy. You're just going to fine everybody. That's going to cover the funding. So, yeah, no, it's a nightmare. I talked to Rex in length about it. Rex is willing to come up with some kind of legislation to get it repealed.
But that'll be too late. We have to implement it again.
Yeah, I don't know. But
it's supposed to be before next year's tax notices, so we do have this legislative session that we can really try to do something about it. No one loves it.
No. Yeah, I mean, it would just be catastrophic. I can't imagine the pitchforks. And I'll probably have a pitchfork leading the pack.
Yeah.
You know? But it's, anyway, that's something that I meet with George a lot regarding this. And there's a lot of counties and a lot of municipalities that are kind of just choosing to ignore it, which is not a good idea. I mean, George is out ahead of it. In George fashion, there's just no way that we can. I don't know what we're going to do, but we've really got to work hard to see if we can just get that repealed. It's horrible legislation. Anyway, we've been working.
What was the name of it again?
It's House Bill 48. If you just Google House Bill 48, Utah. Comes up. It's the Wildland Urban Interface Modification Bill.
Even philosophically, like, if there's additional risk, you know who should handle that? The actuaries and the individuals and their insurance companies. Like, this is a very big brother thing to do.
Claims the reason they're doing it is because people are getting dropped by their insurance companies.
I get that. Yeah.
Casey's.
Yeah.
That's a personal problem between them and their insurance company.
Anything we do would make it worse.
Right.
Yeah.
Work that out with your insurance company. Don't get the government involved.
Yes. So anyway, that's, you're going to hear a lot more about that in upcoming budget discussions with emergency management, but I've been working on that a lot. You know, we talked a little bit about Chief Mike Phillips, you know, was injured.
You got an update on him?
Doing well. He's, I don't know, prognosis of coming home, but I think within the next few weeks. Surgeries have gone really well. His rehabilitation, physical therapy, I guess he's kind of running circles around him, saying, get me out of here. So he's doing really well. We were able to put together a fundraiser, smoked 2 whole hogs, had Dutch oven potatoes, and we raised around $37,000 that night. So super good. So
a number on how many people you fed?
Don't know. We're planning on 600. I know we served more. We served a lot more. Yeah, so that money. So Mike's wife runs a daycare. She kind of had to shut that daycare down to be with him and to help him. You know, this will be funds to get them over that hump. And then, yeah, I was really proud of everybody that worked on that. It was a huge success. Had firefighters from Paraguna were serving meals. Firefighters from Canaraville, anyway, across the whole county. It was really cool. It was a really great event. The governor actually attended, came and met privately with the Phillips family in the back for a while and showed their support. It was just really cool. At a capital facilities plan meeting the other day, that I believe that's on the agenda for today to talk about that. There was an RFP and staff has narrowed that down. Airport board meeting, that's still working toward an early morning flight. There's a whole bunch going on there. It's going to be a little while, but that's at the forefront of working on that. I attended the One Utah Summit at SUU. That was a 3-day event. Lots of legislators there. Lots of leadership type stuff. It was really good. In conjunction with that, attended Fly Iron County. Had an opportunity to speak with some more legislators there. Jail's ongoing. I want to talk about flooding for a minute in Canaraville. So Canaraville the other night got 3.49 inches of rain, which was the highest of anyone in the county. Didn't have any major problems. Had some little bit of debris over the roads. I think that all got taken care of really easily. We delivered them sand for their sandbags. Deployed their sandbag machine. George actually spent the night Friday night. I think George basically worked from Thursday to Sunday morning without a break. He said he caught a couple of hours of sleep on the floor of his office on Friday night. I told him to go home and he wouldn't. So luckily the storm Saturday night split right before it got to us and we didn't get hammered a second time on Friday or on Saturday night. But again, George, Mayor Allred, those guys were kind of inseparable over the weekend, making sure that Canaraville was taken care of. SU Aviation Saturday morning actually flew, they were doing some air operations, they actually flew some of those flood areas down there just to make sure that everything was going. They reported back that the water was in the ditches where it was supposed to be. Maria and I and Sammy met with SUU legal and athletic department this week talking about the project, the athletics project. We should expect a draft contract from them. I think it's going to be really favorable to everybody. There's been a lot of time and effort put into that. I think it's gonna turn out to be a good project, but we should. What was the timeline on a draft?
In a few weeks here.
So, that's moving forward. That's all I've got. It's a mouthful. I feel like this last couple of weeks has just been running from one thing to another.
Thank you. You guys have covered some of the things I had, but on the flooding, I called Rich Wilson, and we had a traco stage that at the nursery. Appreciate Bruce and his crew. I called the mills. They staged two tracos at their bridge. We had a traco stage at UDOT. So I called Paul Bittman at Cedar City, their city manager, and they staged a traco there at the Woodbury Split. The challenge of Woodbury Split is that when we have these big events, those big boulders come rolling through there. And when they exit the Woodbury Split going towards Quitchapa, that loses the velocity and it just drops those rocks right there and they just stack up. And that's why we had that in, what was it, 21, that it plugged up. And that's part of the NRCS plan, is to maybe pour some walls or continue that channel down so the velocity carries those boulders down away so we can have a track go downstream and have a thumb and pull those boulders out so that the water keeps flowing. So, but like Mike said, we dodged a bullet on Saturday. I guess 2 or 3 inches. I can't imagine what would have happened if we would have got that, but it would have been ugly. I was not able to go to the meeting over there, but we did a five-county passed a resolution on the Forest Service timber sales. They've got some new, I mentioned this before, they've got some new sawmills over in Escalante and areas, and they're in desperate need. The Daltons over there, they use a lot of this fallen timber for, they chip it and use it for their turkey beds. But there's some timber sales over there that are all ready to go, and they just, anyway, Commissioner Pollack went back to Washington, D.C. and met with the head of the Forest Service, and I think there's been some favorable things. In fact, I think that, I couldn't make it to that meeting they had, but I think Commissioner Pollack said, why don't we just let us as a county administer those timber sales, and they said, go ahead. So I don't know whatever happened, but it's a... could be some good things going there with letting the counties be more involved in some of these timber products projects. We had our five county behavior or board of health and behavior health meetings this last week. They went good. We had, and I might have mentioned this last time, I couldn't remember, but we had a meeting at the DNR with the state with their state water plans. They're traveling around. I think I mentioned that before. Nicole, I wanted to ask you about this. I had a lobbyist show up with a new owner of Braffitts Creek. They're trying to find, I guess, they're trying to get year-round access, and the DNR is not happy with that because they've done a lot of deer habitat up there with the WRI projects. And... So they've talked to the Ashdowns, Nichols about getting another way into that area so they could use it year round. I know the road, we don't maintain that road at all, do we, Bruce? It's the grades are not. It was kind of an illegal road, wasn't it? In a way, what's that?
That's right.
Would you come up and would you come up to the mic for a minute, Bruce? I want to ask you some.
Bruce was in the meeting. We met with DNR and we all got on the same page about that.
I met with this lobbyist and the owner. They came by and we had a meeting last week. And tell me about that road. I mean, we've never maintained it or plowed it or anything.
So that the DNR has a signed document that had the landowners above them. Frank was one. Another Ashdown. There was 3 or 4 or 5 different signatures. That said this is only going to be a part-time road. And the alternative would come from right there where Matt Bullock has his calving operation along in between Summit and Enoch.
And that's the road that goes up.
There's a road
that goes up to Ashdowns, right?
Yeah, but I don't know that I don't even know if it's prescriptive.
That's probably steeper than
the other one. Rocky. Right. It's rocky. I rode a horse up there years and years ago, and I guess it's better now, but mm-hmm. that's what their alternative is. But the way I seen it, it looked pretty cut and dried. We had our second meeting. I wasn't there for the second one, but I'm assuming that with the signed paper that it is what it is at this point. I mean, you can't. They said we're legit. We were legal to stop this people from going in the road. I think it's just managing expectation of that investor is what it is now.
Right. Right. Anyway.
That road has never been maintained. It was James Fales put it in, like you said, illegally. It's paved partway up.
Right.
But it's not to width.
Was it chip sealed or paved?
I think it was paved. I think it's paved road.
It's kind of falling apart, isn't it?
Didn't have a proper base.
Yeah, it didn't have the proper base.
The shoulders.
Didn't have proper width. Didn't have shoulders.
There's a spot up there where there's like a 3 foot, like.
Yeah. You go up.
Kill you if you hit, if you hit it wrong. Yeah, it's not safe.
That's what I know about it. It's probably that access is going to be partial year, based on what the legality of it is. But there is that other one. I don't know.
I've been up that road a couple times.
It's a rough road.
Yeah, I'm just curious what the. That's good to have the background of the DNR meeting. Thank you. We got an email. We've had a little problem at the senior center.
with, in the winter, water kind of ponds there in the curb and gets icy. And I just, I told the director just to go ahead and, I think Cedar Welding bid a galvanized dip plate. We're just going to put a deck plate over and cover it up so when they pull up, they can just span that ice. And I told her just to go ahead. I hope you're good with that, Commissioner.
Yeah,
I told her just to go ahead with that. And then Tuesday night, it's right after our budget meetings. I'm going to try to hurry back. They're having the Republican Party's organized a pancake dinner at the park. Anybody can come if they want to donate. It's a Charlie Kirk Turning Point type event to kind of honor him and maybe raise some funds for the local chapter at SUU. And so I'm going to grab my grill and go cook for that. And so just to get that word out, I think it starts at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. So if you'd like to bring their family and come have some pancakes, that'd be great. So I think that's all I have. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? Got a few minutes, but... Yes, come on up.
Senior Center.
Uh-huh.
He cornered me last week.
Okay.
Nick cornered me. She asked me a couple questions that she's concerned about the Senior Center over in Cedar.
Okay.
Is we did not put a light at the back door of that basement when we added that on.
Oh, really?
And I don't remember. And I didn't
say they didn't, or?
They did not.
That's weird.
Which I was surprised, and I don't remember. And I didn't get a chance to go up Friday afternoon after she had talked to me. So she was wondering if we can look into getting a light out that back door there. I can look into that and see what it's going to take.
Marshall Evans did the electrical on that.
I think so, yeah. I was going to talk to them, see if they can come and look at it, give me an idea. Then she says there's no smoke detectors or carbon monoxide detectors in part of that building. That she's concerned about. In the older part, I think.
Oh, in the old part. Yeah. But the new part there is?
New part, I think there was. We were more up to date on that one. The old one, I don't know how old that building was. So...
Maybe we could talk to Marshall
and have him look through that. So that was just a couple of things when you mentioned the Senior Center.
Okay.
That she brought that up Friday to me. I said,
Missed on the plans.
Yeah. So that was just.
I had Ron draw those in like 2 weeks, and we did. We pushed that through really quick.
We did. But no, she says that light, and I don't know how we missed or if we did or if it's on the corner. She says, do you think we can get one? Because there's a lot of them, the seniors will come in and out of there, access it, and it's where it's getting darker.
Power-wise, it might be easier just to put one up higher on the second, pull power from the second floor and just have a bigger floodlight right there. Would that work?
So it might, yeah. And we'll look with that. I'll get with Marshall and Evans this week, see if we can look at it and see what it will take.
Okay.
And then from there. But then just those couple things
right.
that she mentioned.
Sounds good. Okay. Thanks for bringing that up.
Our fairgrounds. Might as well send some here. Fairgrounds. Thane has pictures of the kids that are doing Brody's in the parking lot. Officer Bleak. I will get you the copy of the license plate because he followed him back to the high school and took pictures of license plates.
Excellent.
Okay.
Do we have somebody that can take care of that?
We have some rakes and let those kids go fix
That's
it.
That's right.
That's I what has more, to happen.
I think, never mind.
Right?
Where are we off?
Officer Blake?
Oh, absolutely. No, that's helpful because, you know, I've talked to Brad about it a number of times and I'm like, please. Yes.
Was it you, know. Nicole?
It might
That's
be.
She
was out there in her Jeep.
That's wonderful. I will have that passed on today.
So I will forward that. Thane just told me this morning, he says, I was up there working, and I watched kids during lunch do some Brody's, and I wouldn't follow them back to the school.
Good for him.
So, Terry, while you're standing there.
That's what we need.
Yeah.
I was going to bring this up during my budget meeting, but I've asked Terry's permission on this. But I had a conversation. We've had challenges for a while on controlling the temperature in this building.
Yeah.
I'm sugarcoating it. Nicole will tell you how it is.
Yes.
But so there have been some challenges. Kind of a lot of service calls have had to happen. The last time the train guys were here, we have Honeywell controllers and train equipment. And so I was talking with the train guys, and they're like, oh, yeah, the boiler goes and the water goes out at 165, but it comes back at 138. In other words, the air conditioner's running the same time the boiler is.
Yeah.
We've got dueling banjos going on, and it's...
And it usually happens at the startup of the fall.
Yeah.
It's the worst, and then spring shutdown. It's usually the two worst times.
Trying to figure out how to deal with
it. Carrie called me last Monday or Tuesday last week and says that it was 80 degrees in her office at 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
Right over here, and the sun hadn't even hit it yet.
And the worst part about that is the reason that was so hot was because the air it got cool enough outside that the air conditioner turned off, so they're getting the full force of the heat rather than having half the heat wasted on the air conditioner.
We can't get them to work together, and then we're having to reset them a lot. John sets them, I reset them, Thane resets them to try to get them back on. So we'd had train here last. Well, it was VRCM or VCRM come in last week to look at some controls and try to get some of the stuff updated and fixed, but we don't know how long it's going to hold.
So I had kind of an extended conversation with the train folks, and I thought, man, because one of the things they said was because it's train machines and Honeywell equipment, they can't dig deep enough. We get the idiot lights on the dashboard kind of a thing. And so what I said, well, would you mind if we ask you to do an ROI analysis on what it would cost and what our ROI would be from a utility perspective on changing the controllers to match the system so that we can have better control? There's a few things that have always bugged me. Nicole and I talk about this. At our house, when it's not hot or cold, nothing's happening. Here, it's always
something
running.
Something is happening.
It's always running.
With the systems.
And so, yeah. And so, A, I would like to figure out how to furlough the building for a weekend, you know, to have an unoccupied mode so that we're not just continually running. I'll come in on a Sunday afternoon, and it's working every bit as hard as it is on a weekday, you know. Mm-hmm. But then it would be good to maybe have fewer service calls.
Yeah.
And we're going to pull numbers, but I believe just the electrical alone, we spend $50,000 a year on just electrical for this building. And that's not the gas.
Utilities the last 2 years on this building has been at $85,000 for the last 2 years.
So I was going to ask
this
permission.
Right
to,
on close to being online.
Does WIC have any input on this? Because they're the contractor.
I can ask WIC.
Maybe call but WIC.
But my request was going to be was to maybe see if we can get permission to have Train run an ROI estimate for us on changing the controllers. And see if maybe we can implement some of those things, have fewer service calls, have better control of the temperature.
And hopefully keep that expense on the electric
and
down,
mitigate
which would maybe
that
offset
expense,
the cost of it.
I think that'd be fine.
Because if we could cut it,
brainer.
The guy, the tech was like, oh, maybe $60,000. I said, well, if we can save $10,000 a year, that's a 6-year ROI.
Yeah.
But maybe it's even better. I don't know.
It might be. But also, we've also got two solar companies that's going to be starting up projects. We might can work with them on some solar too on this building. Which would be worth looking into if we
mitigate
could
some of that electrical
systems that way.
All right.
Okay. I didn't want to run you up at 10 o'clock, but John, you kept talking.
I know. I'm sorry.
It wasn't me. Sorry.
It was not your fault.
But I figured just a couple of things where you mentioned it. And I think Officer Blake would like to know that we do have something he can proceed to.
Yes.
Up our fairgrounds.
He's got some rakes those kids can use.
That's such a good plan.
I'm serious.
I'm not working today, but I'll pass it on to the dude that is. As soon as you get it.
You fix those ruts with a rake, and it's going to be
fun. You won't be back doing it again.
Yeah.
Don't do that again.
That'll cure it in a hurry.
And invite the whole school to come watch.
Yeah. Right?
Okay. Well, let's take a 10-minute break, and we'll resume our meeting then.
That was a little bit exaggerated, Mike. But,
yeah. It's all right. They didn't tell me what to yell at you. They just told me to yell at you.
You know, we're glad you held back a little bit.
Well, Nicole is reiterating her position on HB
48. Oh, it's awful.
She should be a lobbyist.
You're rolling, Commissioner, whenever you're ready.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, we're going to resume our county commission meeting and go to agenda item number one. This is a public hearing, discussion on possible approval of a proposed zone change, ordinance 2025-9, to the Iron County zoning map zone change from RA20, rural agricultural 20 acre, to R1/2, residential half acre, on approximately 141.25 acres located near 4400 West and 4400 North. Applicant is Equestrian Trails Ranch, LLC. Brett Hamilton will present this.
All right. So this is just a general idea of the location of the property as was described. We've got 4,000 North to the south, 4,400 West just to the west of the property, and then 4,400 North. That's kind of there just in the center of the project boundary. So I guess just bigger picture where we're located. We're kind of just southwest of Mid Valley Road and Lund Highway. Again, one of the things that is depicted here, that is the proposed, the planned route for the Cedar Valley Belt Route. So that shows that kind of going through the property there. With the zoning on the property, it is, as was mentioned, currently rural agriculture, 20 acre. It is adjacent also to other R-half zoning. And if we can get this here, so these three properties here, they are also owned by the same owner that's proposing the change here. And those other three properties are currently R-half acre as well. So that's the proposed change for these three properties as well to line up and match with those other ones that they currently own. We put this in here with the transportation plan just to show what the plan is, you know, for the whole master plan. Again, the solid lines are just showing existing roadways, and then the dashed lines are showing future proposed roadways. So this just kind of shows the project site within kind of the road network that's planned. And as you may recall, the latest change was this 3700 West that was added in just a couple meetings ago. So that's noted there. This just kind of shows a conceptual layout. Again, the owner owns these three properties here, so they kind of have a layout shown of that. And then again, it would probably be something similar. You've got some half-acre lots here and then one-acre lots here. And it would be, if this were to be approved, it would be the applicant's intent to do something similar. So the intent wouldn't be to just grid everything out into half-acre lots. It would probably be something similar to what they've done or are proposing to do with the current property that's zoned R-half, is just to kind of have a mix of lot sizes. And again, this shows that belt route that goes through the project site as well. So within this portion here, there wouldn't be any access from the project site directly onto the belt route. They'd have to go to other portions where it would be available. So down on 4000 North at that intersection, or further to the east over at that other intersection there. So again, applicant and owner is the Equestrian Trails Ranch, LLC, represented by Go Civil Engineering. Dallas is here. The whole project site is 141.25 acres, proposed to go from RA20 to R-half. It is within the Tier 2 boundary area, and services such as water and sewer are in the vicinity next to the project. And again, just as a reminder, obviously, the zone change proposal is a legislative decision. And there's, on one of the next slides here, you know, obviously the criteria or evaluation criteria for rezoning. So just a quick summary on Planning Commission. There was a good turnout uh, for for Planning Commission, I would say about 30 residents from the surrounding area that were there. About 15 of them spoke, and you know, many of the concerns I think are oftentimes the concerns that do come up with the zone changes. You know, traffic concerns, concerns about the rural nature of the area, and you know, just the change and things that occur when you get additional population into an area, and just how it kind of changes, you know, perhaps the area in general. So. The Planning Commission did ultimately recommend approval of the zone change. And again, there's the evaluation criteria that were looked at and that, you know, you can refer to as well. And again, so now we've just gone through all those steps. So it would just be the public hearing portion, any questions or discussion that you want to have, and then county making a decision. So that's the end of that presentation. Any questions for me before public hearing?
I have a couple questions. Okay. So have we tied up the easements we need on the belt route going through that property?
So, yeah, as part of this project, there would be dedication for all of that roadway along there. So this property here, the county actually already owns. And then there's just to the south of here, there's actually the county's going through the process right now to acquire additional right-of-way nearby. So yeah, because this whole portion here is kind of part of the Equestrian Trails Ranch project, yeah, all portions of that belt route along there would be dedicated to the county.
And then what about drainage? I know we've talked about requiring larger detention basins than we have in the past. Is that going to apply to this new development?
I know that, and Dallas could probably speak to a little bit more, but there was additional conversation and discussion on the drainage and just how that would be handled. So,
Dallas, you want to come up if you'd like?
Thanks. Dallas Buckner, Go Civil. So the conceptual exhibit we have up here is our layout for what's currently zoned R1/2. And then obviously this request is for to do the rest of it, so we know we have some guidelines of how we're going to lay it out. The kind of half moon shaped half or quarter circle shaped piece is planned to be a pretty good size amenity area for the subdivision. And I've got another meeting with Rich tomorrow, to discuss the belt route right of way. But what we had talked about with staff in previous meetings and sketch plan was, we're looking at putting probably a box culvert that is big enough for pedestrian traffic, basically the top of that at grade, and having that below, and then putting a drainage area almost on the exact opposite side of the belt route that'll have, so because the belt route's going to be a limited access, so we want to be able to try to get residents from one side to the other with a box culvert, but then we plan on having a standalone basin that's going to be pretty big.
Okay. Does it grade or drain to the, which way does it drain, to the west?
It kind of all goes to the north corner. So it's, what's funny is like where the east-west road is, it's almost dead flat across that whole thing.
Right.
But it generally goes to the north, and so we're looking at having like a pond that's going to be in here, and then if we put a box culvert that's big enough for pedestrian, we're going to have our storm water beneath that, so it's going to be very deep.
Okay.
And then we'll catch whatever we can bring back.
Okay.
From there, so if it's 20 so or feet deep, then we should be able to catch quite a bit of that north of the pond as well. So
that's all the questions I have. You have any questions?
No.
This is not an HOA then. It's going to be up to the county to maintain this, or?
No, so we do intend on coming. So with our preliminary plat, we're going to have to bring that before our Planning Commission. We're planning on coming back through with a development agreement in conjunction with the preliminary plat application. A lot of the roads in here are just going to be standard county roads, but the entry roads that are the wider ones, you can tell those are bigger. Those are going to be 100-foot right-of-ways, and we're planning on having medians, and then we're going to have the equestrian areas. We have trails in here. So there is intended on being a HOA component, but then we're planning on having a separate stormwater basin. And so that'll be something that through that development agreement process, we talk about the county. Is this something that the county maintains? Is this part of the HOA? But there's planned to definitely be a lot of HOA type amenities in this subdivision. But the basin, I intend on the basin being like a couple acres and probably at least 20 feet deep. And so that's going to be something that's not necessarily, that's probably just going to be fenced off in a giant hole in the ground versus the amenities where we're going to have trails and parks and that type of thing. And so I think between the subdivision amenities and then the stormwater basin, those will be pretty clear cut, but through the development agreement process, we talk with the county to say, hey, is this something that we're maintaining with our HOA, or does the county want to take it over? Is it a regional type thing, or is it just for us? And
so are we designing these detention bases? I guess that almost, where it's flat, it almost would be retention.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's 100% going to be retention, yeah.
So, I mean, are we engineering those for 100-year storms, 500-year storms, or?
Yeah, I would look at probably what I've at least talked about internally at my office is making sure that from like that box culvert to the bottom, we've got at least a 100-year storm. And then if a 500-year event hit, that we have it without impacting the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So it could back up into that box culvert a little bit. But generally without any outlets, I would look for probably a 500, right? Because it's not going anywhere besides in a hole.
Right. Moving forward, that's just so flat out there. It's just the water's got to go somewhere, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Okay. That answers my questions.
My concern with doing these out there, and this one you're only going half acre, but my concern is you start getting these smaller plots in these areas, and there's no. Yes, I just want to make sure we're thinking about the safety of people that are trying to. If there's anybody trying to walk out of there, we don't have roads that are accessible with big shoulders. We don't have sidewalks. We don't have those kinds of things. But if we're not going high density, we're half acre lots, then I'm all right with that. But man, it starts to scare me to push developments like that out into the county.
Yeah, and one of the only reasons that this is really even a possibility out here is because of that, the city's trunk main that's on our east boundary, and then the Conservancy District water. I mean, there's a lot of subdivisions I've done in the county that are 5 acre because of septic requirements and that kind of thing. And I know that there's a lot of other areas that are zoned half acre in the county, but this is one where we actually have the infrastructure to be able to
support it.
So,
okay, well, we need to have a public hearing on this. So thank you, Dallas. If there's not any other discussion, Chair will declare the public hearing open for this.
Thank you, Commissioner. Bruce Anderson, Iron County Public Work Director. I'm opposed to this for more than one reason. One is Clark, right on the end of 4000, Clark Webster just put his, he came through with the Planning Commission and things and put his property in Agriculture Protection Act. When building like this goes on, you're going to go strip that ground and prairie dogs are coming in. They're no, it's happened over and over and over that the prairie dogs will show up when the brush is gone. and then who's going to protect him? Where's his protection? Where's the other agriculture protection? There's people with horses there, and the prairie dogs will dig holes on their property, and the horses will break their legs, and they're extremely expensive anymore.
The other issue I have with this is traffic going to and from Three Peaks Recreation. This year, the Public Works Department did a project to mitigate what was already there. They're zoned 20 acres already, and there's 20-acre lots up there. And the people don't like all the traffic and all the stuff going to Three Peaks. Well, I talked to Maria. The reason that we did that was just the bike races themselves bring in $1.2 million. And that you can check with her. I double-checked that figure with her this morning. But just the oil that we put on that on the one road was $56,000. That's no labor, no gravel, no time. I just think that we're going to end up having to mitigate more and more. The last BLM meeting we went to, in the 24-week period, there was 14 weeks that there was events at Three Peaks. And I live on 4,000, and there is a ton of traffic coming up 4,000 going to Three Peaks. It's the only alternate route to that place besides Mid Valley Road. And now you're going to impact it. To me, this is high density, right? If you leave it at 20 acres, we've just spent so much energy and so much money on Three Peaks itself that when you say we're putting in, I don't know what it'd be, 100 more residents that close, then they're going to complain. And as a matter of fact, I was the guy there. I've seen this at the Diamond Z Arena. We had a little kid rodeo event there, and we was not able to play the national anthem over the loudspeaker because the residents of the surrounding area complained about the noise. So we had to go and it's just, you know, I see this over and over and over. We approve these things and we say, this is the rule. Flying L is a perfect example. Flying L said, we're going to take care of our own water. And since it flooded over there, they call me all the time. Hey, this is flooding on my place. You need to put a pipe into the creek. Well, that wasn't the expectation of the developer is different than the expectation of the homeowner. And so the county actually owns a retention pond now because that expectation of the developer on Painted Desert said, we'll take care of our own water. And the road's right here and the landscape comes right into it. When I go on, when it comes to plow snow in a subdivision like this, that's the furthest subdivision away from the road, from the road department. And I got to get salt on it somehow, but I got to plow them with trucks. I can't do it with big trucks. I got to use pickups because it's too small and people park in there. I'm not able to fit a big truck around them cul-de-sacs and in and out with people parking there. And then when you do, it takes up the landscape that's right in the road that's in our right-of-way anyways, and then they call and yell at me. I think especially the 100-foot ones with the medians with the planters in the middle, how are you supposed to plow around that with a big truck? How are you supposed to mitigate that? And I get that it's their property and they can, I totally agree with private property rights. You should be able to do what you can on your private property. This was set up for A20. We're set up for A20 to protect Three Peaks, to protect the water situation out there. I'm just telling you that you'll say to me, well, they'll sue us if we don't do it. We're going to pay it in mitigation anyway. We're going to have to figure it out and pay it in mitigation anyway. The money's going to have to go out. We might as well just say we're protecting our park. That's why Los Angeles isn't in Jackson Hole. You can't have that much density in a place people go to. And I'm like Ken. If there's no people will be walking their dogs and stuff up and down there, and then people come with their rock crawlers, four-wheelers, whatever it is, to Three Peaks. They were going too fast, and I hear it all the time. I live on that road. They're not going too fast, but you're going to hear that. You're going to hear that over and over.
Grubbing and bringing prairie dogs.
Yeah, as soon as you grub it, prairie dogs will be there.
Don't they just grub what they're going to build, develop?
Yeah, they'll grub the whole thing. We're going to
the whole 140 acres?
We'll go look at the one on the berry farm. It's all grubbed. They took the whole thing down. They do it in sections, but it's gone, right? The house, there will either be a house, lawn. They got to grub the whole thing. They're not going to leave sagebrush up.
Well, they're not going to develop the whole 142 acres at once, right?
No, but it'll still happen. You can see it, historically it happens over and over and over with buried onks. There's no, I don't know of a subdivision that it hasn't.
They like the soft dirt and the line of sight.
Yep. Yeah. Once that sagebrush is gone, they'll dig a hole. There's never been a prairie dog over there in my 30 years of living there, but there will be. And now it'll impact all the farmers and ranchers around there. I think it's a bad idea. Just, if we got to figure out a way to slow all this down, in my opinion, because if it snowed tomorrow, the school buses wouldn't get to the school on time. Based on, I don't have enough guys or snow plows to get to there. Right? I just don't. And we need to slow this whole thing down until that capital facility management plan comes and start thinking ahead of this. You know, where are we going with this? Where's our water coming from? I'm born and raised in Cedar City my whole life. My grandparents on both sides walked in here when Brigham Young said walk in here. Right? And we need a capital facility management plan because I've already bought my snowplow. Every time there's a new subdivision like this, then the residents that lived here their whole entire lives got to buy another snowplow. So everybody that comes in gets part of theirs paid by everybody else that's here. We need to figure out what kind of impact fees that we can do to make this right so that the people that have lived here forever aren't buying 10 snowplows. I bought my cop car. You know, Ken has a cop car. I've already been there, done that. And we need to get ahead of this because it's just getting worse and worse and worse, and pretty soon we're not going to be able to afford what we have. The water. You and I have talked about the water, Paul.
Do they have water rights? They must have water, right? They're bringing water?
They have water, but it's not wet. You know, I'm going to have to pay for their well to be sunk or whatever, right? It's not in a tank. It's not ready to go. They have water rights, but then who pays for the drilling and the tank? And everybody does. And I just don't think it's right that we can just say, oh, we're going to just keep developing, developing, developing. We got to start thinking about this ahead because we're losing. We're losing every day we let a development come in. We lose it more and more. And this one's too close to Three Peaks. We'll spend it in mitigation somehow, right? I just disagree with this one. I think we need to keep the development closer to town. And this is too far out. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce.
Well, Sheriff's coming up. There are tools that the commissioners have, and I would suggest visiting with Brett. And it comes down to how you structure your tiers, how you do the zoning things. So, you know, it's maybe you can make it less welcoming, but from that perspective. Because otherwise you've got a system that's built that you have to say no to somebody who, by all rights, should qualify. Everything about this, they've followed all the rules. But maybe the rules are a little bit too lenient, to Bruce's point.
You know, and I have to agree with Bruce, we're getting further and further behind. I asked for 16 deputies last year, looking at the growth of the county that was expected to come in, and I didn't get them. Now the growth is here, and it's continuing to grow. I keep getting these plats coming across my desk saying, we need you to provide law enforcement for these areas. How am I going to do it? I don't have the deputies to be able to keep up with the growth. You know, our crime stats keep going up. You know, we keep losing deputies because we're not competing with the state in pay. You know, it's becoming more and more difficult to recruit qualified personnel. And yet with the growth, we can't keep up. I'm asking for 16 more deputies again this year. So until there's the tax revenue there to be able to, as Bruce said, plan ahead and get ahead of it and keep up with the growth, then I just don't see how we continue to go forward. We're just growing way too fast. We don't have the infrastructure there to support it. So until we figure out how to get the infrastructure there, I don't see how we keep going forward. Well, thanks.
Any other comments? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and discuss this.
I'm answering a text in regards to the wheelies in the or the donuts in the parking lot real quick. Okay.
there's a lot of good points have been brought up. You know, we're pushing out to this area that is our recreation and that is designated as that area, and inevitably the complaints are going to come that if there's events there, which there's going to be, and it's going to continue to grow. This weekend, we're going to have the state finals of the mountain bike event. Maria said they're planning on 3,500 contestants, not family, grandma, everybody else. This is 3,500 contestants, and so that area is going to be inundated, and the residents in that area are already burdening that with you know, the open space that's already there. So if that continues to be developed and put homes into that area, that the complaints are just going to continue to grow.
I agree. I think in this particular situation, I mean, John probably hit the nail on the head. Current policies, regulations and everything else, they've met it. You know, to respect, I mean, basically the rule of law, I don't see any other recourse or any other solution, but I mean, to approve it, because that's what the law says. The law says this is what they've had to do, this is what they've had to meet, and they've met all of that by the letter of the law and by our own policies and our own ordinances. That's all I got to say.
Has this been farm ground in the past or just sagebrush?
It's brush ground.
It's been fed off, but never farmed.
I mean, I'll just state my opinion. I mean, I've been, you know, in this job for 7 years. And when I've knocked doors for campaigns, everybody says, stop the growth. But, you know, I usually say, well, see that alfalfa field across the street, that 80-year-old guy, he's got kids that don't want to farm it anymore. And he wants to cash in and maybe live a few years and have some money and have some retirement. And I'm not going to go tell him he can't develop it, because it's his property. And that's where I've always been on zoning issues on like this. I know we've got some challenges, but I'm 100% property rights, and it's just tough, because if I don't like the growth any more than we do, but I'm a transplant to Cedar City as of 45 years ago. I know a lot of you guys have lived here your whole lives, but I don't know. It's just, it's Sam, do you have any guidance? If they meet all the our current, I guess, if we want to slow growth down, we need to change our policies.
Well, and this is a zone change, which is a legislative decision. Mm-hmm. So there's a different standard associated with that. You can have policies and ordinances in place to set up to make that request. But as the legislative body, not pushing one way or another, this is a decision in which you have a lot of discretion. So I'll just say that.
Okay. I don't have anything else.
I think we just, as been stated by Sheriff and by Bruce, we just get further and further behind because we're not implementing the policies we're not changing the policies to force developers to pay for what they're doing.
So, do we have a motion or not?
I'd move for approval of proposed zone change ordinance 2025-9, the Iron County zoning map, zone change from RA20, rural agricultural 20, to R1/2, residential 1/2, on approximately 141.25 acres, located near 4400 West and 4400 North.
Mike, did you mention the ordinance?
Yes.
Okay.
2025-9.
Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, I have a motion on the table. Do I have a second?
Nope.
I'll second that motion. So it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we have a no, so no. Motion passes. Thank you. Appreciate the input. Number two, public hearing discussion, possible approval of a proposed general plan amendment, ordinance 2025-10, tier change, tier 3 to tier 4, tier 4 to tier 2, and tier 2 to tier 4 for properties around the Bryan Head area, properties generally located within sections 30 of Township 35 South. Well, let's just say as described in the agenda, so I don't have to read all that. And this is presented by Brett as well.
All right, so this is kind of a two-part. We've got the general plan amendment first, and then subsequently there will be the zone change that accompanies it. So we'll take it two different processes. There are two different ordinances for it as well. So with this first one, with the history, obviously, is, you know, zoning came into place in the county around 1980. The tiers were established in 1995, kind of adjusted and modified in 2005 with Ordinance 205. And obviously we've got the septic density study that was done and referenced earlier in the day, you know, when we were talking about subdivisions and that 5-acre lot minimum. So that plays into some of the proposed changes that are here for both the tiers and the zoning changes. So we'll just jump into that again. So just as a reminder, Tier 1 is all of those incorporated areas within the county. Tier 2 is everything just kind of outside of any incorporated area where there's anticipated growth within the next 20 years, give or take. Tier 3 is a little bit of an anomaly. You know, there used to be actually a Tier 3 area in that Bryan Head area before it was annexed into Bryan Head. The Aspen Meadows area, and then everything else is Tier 4. So the vast majority of the county is within Tier 4 areas. In those Tier 4 areas, the minimum lot size is 20 acres. It's intended for rural development, for agriculture. So I think that kind of plays into the discussion that was had as far as, you know, what are the policies today versus what do we want to see. I think when it comes to the tier boundaries and the zoning, I think those are things, obviously, that we would look at potentially to adjust, you know, where we want to see growth occur and happen. So, obviously, this is, you know, we've already gone through the Summit area, Newcastle, Parowan, Paraguna, now Bryan Head, and so we anticipate to see that in some of the other areas as well, you know, Cedar, Enoch, to look at that as well. But today, focus specifically around the Bryan Head area. So this shows the current Tier 2 boundary. So it's the large, bold red line that outlines here. So the proposed change to that Tier 2 boundary, primarily obviously changing that Tier 2 boundary, this whole Aspen Meadows area was incorporated into Bryan Head Town. So some of the other adjustments are here in the north end. The boundary used to go a little bit higher. We're proposing to pull it back a little bit. We don't necessarily see growth happening in that area in the next 20 years or so, especially with all that could potentially occur there in Aspen Meadows and Green Valley Acres, Ski View Estates. There's a lot of potential growth, so we don't necessarily see it needing to happen in that area. So pulling back that Tier 2 area there. A small adjustment down here, there were some smaller lots that were excluded previously from that Tier 2 boundary, so pulling those into the Tier 2 area. And then lastly, down here at the south, this area here is within the Forest Service area, but that's also where Bryan Head Town currently has a lease agreement. That's where their public works yard is, where they keep all their equipment. So they're under current negotiations to potentially acquire that. So we felt like now was a good time to adjust that Tier 2 boundary to include that portion that could in the near future be within Bryan Head Town. So the large solid border around here, that is Bryan Head's annexation boundary. So the essentially area that could potentially be within Bryanhead Town. It's obviously a much larger area, and the reason, again, why we didn't see the need to extend our tier two boundary, you've got a lot of Forest Service area, BLM land kind of around there as well. And again, we just don't see there being expansion very much beyond what they've newly annexed or within the potential areas here where there is development already. And what it potentially could take is just, you know, some sewer and water infrastructure in there. But again, I think the primary focus in Bryanhead after, you know, talking to them is it's really probably going to be that growth within the Aspen Meadows area. So those are those proposed tier changes. Did go to Planning Commission earlier this month, and they did recommend approval for this general plan amendment for all those tier changes.
Thank you. Any questions? Not, I'll go ahead and declare a public hearing open for this agenda item number 2. Any comments, please approach the mic and state your name. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. And is there any discussion amongst the commissioners?
No.
No.
I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the proposed general plan amendment ordinance 2025-10, tier change tier 3 to tier 4, to tier 4 to tier 2, and tier 2 to tier 5.
Four.
For properties around the Bryanhead area, properties generally located within the description in the agenda.
Second.
And moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. Number 3, public hearing, discussion and possible approval of a proposed zone change ordinance 2025-11 to the Iron County zoning map. Zone change from A20 R1 and R1 half to R5 A20 C and SPA to RA20 C to A20 in the Bryanhead area. Applicant is Iron County, presented by Brett.
All right, so some of the main changes again here for the proposed zone changes, it does go back to that septic density study that was done in 2005. So a lot of the properties here in Ski View Estates and Green Meadow Acres, you've got a lot of half-acre lots, a lot of one-acre lots, but you've also got some, you know, that are 10 acres, 5 acres, 3 acres. So people will see, whether they're the current owner or a potential buyer, they'll see that zoning on it, and they'll say, oh, cool, you know, a five-acre piece of property here, R1 zoning or R-half zoning, yeah, I wanna subdivide. So we'll get a lot of inquiries from people wanting to do that. Obviously, with there not being any sewer system or water infrastructure in that area, they're not eligible to subdivide to anything less than 5 acres. So that's, you'll see here, for that Ski View Estates and Green Meadow Acres, instead of being the R-half and R1, the proposal is just to go to R5, residential 5 acres, so that it's clear that regardless, you know, those properties can't be subdivided to less than 5 acres until some type of infrastructure, sewer and water infrastructure, comes in. So this will just kind of be hopefully an indicator that will help, you know, current owners. We've talked to several on the phone. All of them really just, you know, curious about how it impacts their property. Obviously, as far as development goes, those are legal lots of record. They're part of legal subdivisions. They're able to build today, regardless of whether it was R-half or R1 or R-5 for that matter. And as you know, there's provisions in the code already that the setbacks would not necessarily adjust to an R-5 setback that's greater because of the lot sizes that they currently are. They would just default to either those R-half or R1 lot sizes that they have. So that's not going to change that either. So again, then the changes. RA20, at the time that the zoning was all done up here, the RA20 wasn't even an existing zoning designation, so the intent and purpose of that RA20, instead of, you know, being surrounded by A20, there are just less intense uses that are allowed in the RA20, so it helps to protect those existing residential subdivisions in those areas. Again, it kind of just helps feather and taper, you know, potential use categories to protect those residential areas. So that's why surrounding all that, the proposed changes to RA-20. There is a change up here way in the north. Current zoning is commercial. Proposed is to go to A-20. That's been commercial since about, I think it was 1980 or 1983. There's never been anything occurring there. So we just felt like it was appropriate to change that to A-20. This currently is an existing facility up there off Dry Lakes Road. Has an existing conditional use permit. So we felt like it was appropriate to leave that commercial. So those are the main changes there on the zoning. Again, similar to the previous item that we were looking at, there's all the evaluation criteria for the rezoning. And this went to Planning Commission earlier this month, and they did recommend approval of these changes. Any questions?
No.
So we will public, or the chair will declare a public hearing open for this agenda item number 3. There's any comments? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing and go to the commissioners for discussion and a motion.
No discussion.
I don't have any questions.
I'll move for approval of the zone change ordinance 2025-11 to the Iron County zoning map zone change from A-20 to R-1 and R-1/2 to R-5, A-20, C and Spa to RA-20, and C to A-20 in the Bryan Head area.
Second that motion.
It's been moved to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We'll now go to public appointments. Item number 4, public comments. This option, opportunity for you to speak for 3 minutes. Should not repeat other comments, only for items not on the agenda. If you'd like to speak. Seeing none, we'll move to number 5, discussion of possible approval of a professional services agreement between Iron County and Kimley Horn and Associates, Inc. for the preparation of a capital facilities plan and impact fee analysis. Brett.
All right, so this has obviously been in process for a little bit now. As you all know, we've been collecting impact fees. Obviously, this would essentially be to come into greater compliance with state law that discusses and talks about how, you know, in order to be collecting impact fees, we need to have that capital facilities plan of our own in place. So the primary purpose is to identify existing infrastructure that we have and what future needs we have to identify that future development and growth. So in the three focus areas of this capital facilities plan would be sewer, storm drainage, and transportation. So again, it would be to, you know, fully be in compliance with Utah Code Title 11 for impact fee facilities plan. And then also it would create and adopt appropriate impact fees and service fees to help pay for the infrastructure and services. So again, I think similar that was mentioned earlier today, you know, to be able to help any new development appropriately pay for, you know, the infrastructure needs of the development. So we did go through the RFP process. We did receive 3 proposals from 3 different firms. We conducted 2 different interviews. And from those 2 different interviews, we selected a consultant that we felt like would be able to perform the work to the greatest extent. So we did go through a little bit of a process where we were refined to the scope of work with them. And then, of course, we're bringing that forward as a recommendation to the commission. So the recommendation is to go with Kimley Horn & Associates. The total cost of the plan would be approximately $335,000. It would be on a time and materials basis, so not on a lump sum fee. So one thing, too, originally the RFP went out for a request for just a capital facilities plan. And 2 of the 3 consultants that submitted proposals, as part of that request for proposal, we basically say, hey, you guys are the experts. Let us know if there's anything you think that we're missing in our proposal. So one of the things that 2 of the 3 consultants said is hey, you're really going to, you should really tie together the capital facilities plan and the impact fee analysis. It's going to eliminate a lot of redundant work. Duplicating collection of data, So we felt like that was a great suggestion, and it should help streamline the whole process. It should help get it completed faster. I think originally we were anticipating about a year for the capital facilities plan, and then afterwards an additional 6 months or so to actually get an impact fee analysis done so that we could, you know, start charging those appropriate fees. So the proposed timeline for this, for both the capital facilities plan and impact fee analysis, would be about 12 months. So again, condensing that timeline, reducing overlap on, and hopefully, you know, a reduction in overall cost because they're being done together and done concurrently. So these are kind of just a list of the primary deliverables that would be provided. So first one, a database of the existing facility inventory. And with that inventory, it would be set up so that as, you know, additional infrastructure is built, it should hopefully be able to easily be updated so that, you know, the next time, you know, in 5-10 years when we desire to update our capital facilities plan, we've got that data available, easy to update. You don't have to restart the whole process. As part of one of the requirements for the capital facilities plan, you do have to establish a level of service and then project, you know, based on different criteria, you know, again, what those future needs are. A sewer infrastructure operations and management summary, short, medium, and long-term project list. So short would be within the next 5 years, medium about 10 years, and then long-term project beyond that. It would provide cost estimates for the short-term projects, so anything within 5 years, and then it would have a project prioritization. So essentially that could also be based on various criteria, whether it's based on, you know, what could provide the greatest good for the greatest amount of people. The criteria could be based on safety, you know, which improvements are going to provide the greatest benefit for increased safety. So there's different ways to do that project prioritization, but that would be included as well. And then, of course, the capital facilities plan and impact fee assessment, and as well as user and service fee considerations and recommendations there. So I know that's kind of a quick summary of everything, but available for any questions that you have on all that.
Luke, would the rollback, could this qualify for any of those funds?
No, not the plan.
Not the plan.
You know, I attended the meeting the other day where we really digested this RFP versus the others. This one is very comprehensive. It's actually got elements of finance and engineering built into it that the others didn't. I believe this is just the most complete plan that's going to get us the best product in the end, really the best bang for our buck, if that's a fair analysis, Brett. We were going through everybody, staff, everybody that was present really believes that this is the best way to go. It all made sense.
Any discussion?
Nope.
Not all entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve for the approval of professional service agreement between Iron County and Kimley Horn and Associates, Inc. for the preparation of this capital facilities plan and impact fee analysis.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Number six, resolution 2025-9, appointing a representative and an alternate representative for the annual county's indemnity pool, USIP, annual meeting to be held November 21st, 2025. And John, you've been that in the past.
Yeah, I'm happy to continue serving if that's what the commission would like. Yeah, this is an annual requirement that USIP has because we are an indemnity pool, not insurance.
Right.
So do we? So who's been our representative and alternate?
So historically, it's been me, and then Jen has been the alternate.
Okay. I didn't know who I couldn't remember who the alternate was.
But that's not fixed in stone. I mean,
well, you still good with being an alternate?
I'm happy to be an alternate.
She hasn't keyed my car yet.
All right. Then I'm gonna make a motion.
Any ideas in her head?
Move approval of resolution 2025-9, appointing John Whitaker as our representative and Jennifer Bradbury as our alternate representative for the annual Utah County's indemnity pool annual meeting to be held November 21st, 2025.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We'll now convene as the Board of Equalization and go to item number 7. Review and approval of veteran, circuit breaker, low-income, and blind tax abatements for the 2025 tax year. Michaela.
Thank you. Thank you, madam.
Okay, so basically we've done the majority of our abatements. Everything's been processed and pushed into the treasurer now. The front sheet that you're looking at there is the comparison between where we're at right now versus the final numbers from last year. If you can look there, the reimbursement difference as it stands right now, we'll get $630.92 more right currently. With an abatement difference of $137,467.04, which looking at the numbers for overall like types of abatements, everything went down except for veterans. We had almost 100 more veterans this year added onto the program. And then, like I said, the circuit breakers went from 353 to 360, or from 365 to 353 this year. I do have a few more that have been turned in the last week or so to be entered. And I do, you know, see a few more coming in before the end of the month, but that's where we're at right now. The next pages that you have, just break it out by district, how much was abated per district. It tells you what kind. But yeah, those are the numbers for this year, or current year anyway. And I'll do this again in November so that we can see exactly where we end for the year.
Great.
Okay, any questions?
No.
So we don't vote on this, we just sign it, right? Oh, approval.
We have to approve.
I think you will. We have to vote. So we entertain the motion.
Make a motion to approve for approval of veteran circuit breaker low income and blind tax abatements for 2025 tax year.
Second.
Then moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Well, we're signing that. We'll go to number 8. Review and a possible approval of the Board of Equalization hearing officer recommendations for the 2025 tax year. Kerry.
Thank you. I believe Carson already mentioned earlier this morning when he did his report that our appeals this year were down, which is good. The first report in front of you is the master log that is generated out of our software Record Eagle for our tax and recording software for Iron County. It is just for review purposes only for everything that was entered. The second report is a log that I keep that shows the adjustments by individual property and appeal accounts for every appeal that was filed. If you turn to the very last page, 8, it shows that there was 311 appeals filed this year, for a total adjustment of market value of $61,492,002, with a taxable value adjustment of $63,117,439. That is the highest adjustment we have made in the Board of Equalization since I've been here for 20 years. But it is mainly due to, for instance, Springfield Farms, that the pig farm out in Iron County, they bought, they were sold to Mango Milford. You'll see on that spreadsheet at the very back of that sheet that was almost $30 million in adjustments right there, because they can't use those pig farms anymore for pigs. They've got to find another use for them, so they've got functional obsolescence on those buildings. So just to put that a little bit in perspective for those adjustments, that high of adjustment.
So if you take that out, where does it put that in?
We're about 30 million, a little over $30 million, which is about average from year to year. So, okay. Yeah, that's why I wanted to put that in.
So that's the outlier.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last report shows, is your commission report, shows the adjustment by district, the tax total difference by county revenue and municipal services. If you looked at the very last page of that two-page report, it shows a tax adjustment and loss for 2025 of $75,740.93 for county services and municipal services of $51,592.86 for a total tax differential loss for the Board of Equalization adjustments of $127,333.78. So if you have any questions for me that I can answer.
I think you've answered mine.
I know. Appreciate your number crunching every year.
And a motion for approval.
All right, I would move to approve the Board of Equalization Hearing Officer recommendations for the 2025 tax year.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Okay.
Motion carries. Did you vote?
Aye.
You did.
Oh, I did.
I heard him.
Did you? Okay.
I wrote it down.
We can check
here.
The tape.
Yep.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go to number nine, I want to just mention something on the zone change we passed, where Bruce and the sheriff spoke. I would, and I think Brett's left, but I would like to call him. I would like us to do what we did with the Meisner development in Parowan, is where it's next to the fairgrounds, is somehow note the deeds for those residents where they realize that they're moving next to a recreational area. And there's going to be noise, and there's going to be disruptions, and that they were there first. So that's just a comment I had, and I'll be calling Brett to see if we can do that. Sam, can we do that with those lots? Can we note that on the deeds and say, look, this is approved, contingent? I mean, we didn't make that in the motion, but you need to be aware that this is next to a recreational facility. And
I'm not aware of a reason why you couldn't include informational content in a deed like that, but that's a caveat, maybe. So.
Well, and I think you'd have to have something affirmatively, you know, requiring that information. I mean, deed restrictions are kind of a big deal. You can't just kind of tack that onto a
I don't know that I would cast
approval of a zone change.
Restriction, but
well, that's how
buyer beware is what I'm saying.
Yeah, caveat emptor, but. Yeah, they're pretty strict as far as getting on to deeds. And are they perpetual? Are they one time? I'm just saying from a title perspective, there's a bit to that. Not that we couldn't do it.
Well, I think we can record that with the deed. Carrie could verify, but I think we could put it
yep.
on the flat and record.
Can we?
On that
I mean, I'm all for property rights, but I'm also, if there's a pig farm there and you build next to it and they were there first, too bad.
Would you want to recall item one and give that guidance?
Would we need to do a new vote and include that in a motion?
Yes.
I think we. I would like that. Are you?
Yeah, I'm good with. No, I'm
voted no, but are you good with that, Mike?
Yeah, no, I'm really.
Is that something you're? I mean, that's just something I've been thinking about.
That's a good idea.
Because I just see that. I mean, some points were made where there's going to be mountain bike races and motorcycles and rock crawlers, and I don't want
kids having bonfires and yep. kids yep. shooting and yep. everything that's going to go on out there.
I just want to make it very clear on the, and so we could note that on the plat.
I think so.
So
So
don't
can
call
we
Ken Carpenter when there's a bonfire at Three Peaks.
So if we can go back to what agenda item was that?
Agenda item number one.
Number one. Okay. So we're gonna reopen number one and I'll entertain a new motion for that, if that's the appropriate way to do it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to word that. Sammy, would you help a brother out?
Sure. It might make sense to say I'll reassert my prior motion, but with the additional guidance that county staff be directed to include informational or advisory content on the plat or other recorded documents to notify property owners of the proximity to recreational property.
I would also, if you can do that, I would say recreational and agricultural.
Yeah.
You writing that down that quick, Mike?
Well, I got the highlights. Okay. I would like to reiterate my motion of approval on agenda item number one, with the addition that the county staff be directed to include informational and advisory content on the subdivision plat to make people aware that there is nearby recreation area, agricultural area. So kind of a buyer beware caveat included on the plat.
That your complaints could be ignored.
There's a possibility that your complaints could be ignored, basically because we were there first and they choose to purchase near these already established areas.
We may have to sum that up on the plat. That's
yeah. That's y'all can stick that into appropriate language. Please do not quote that.
You can put that into ChatGPT and clean it up.
I was just stuck with the y'all can stick that.
I'll second that motion. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And I assume you're still nay. Nay. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Jennifer.
Don't be. I'm the one that jumped up here before you guys were ready for me, so that's
oh,
all.
Oh, no, you're good.
And I apologize for the record. When you went back to item number one, that was in your capacity as the Iron County Commission and not the Board of Equalization, correct?
Oh, did we not go out of... I'm sorry.
Reconvene. I didn't catch the
I'm
reconvene.
Sorry. I made a mistake. So we did not leave the Board of Equalization and reconvene as Iron County Commission. I forgot to do that, so... Are we good?
But in our minds, we did?
Yes.
We can do that ex post facto.
That's a formality, but I just want to make it clear.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that.
The commission agrees that they acted in their capacity.
Yes. Thank you for that catch, yes.
Okay. Right? Mr. Cousins as chair clarified, so.
Yes, thank you. Okay, Jennifer. Now you
worries.
Can
go. No worries. Thank you so much, and good morning. I'll first present items one through three for your consideration and possible approval before moving on to the insurance, because we will be taking more time on that one. In the Sheriff's Office Patrol, Tanner Taylor has elected to transfer from a full-time corrections deputy to a full-time patrol deputy effective 9/28/2025. And Dallin Lingenfelter was selected from the most recent competitive interview and selection process to backfill an upcoming vacant deputy position effective October 13th, 2025. In the Justice Court, Jenny Bettish was selected from the most recent competitive interview and selection process to transfer from a part-time Sheriff's Office Patrol Administrative Assistant to a full-time Judicial Assistant effective October 12, 2025. I apologize. In the Council on Aging Department, Angela Pearson was selected from the most recent competitive recruiting and interview process to backfill the part-time Parowan driver, Meals on Wheels. And that one is effective. I apologize. I should have this on here.
October 14th, 2025.
All right. I'll entertain a motion for items under nine, items one through three.
Make a motion to approve and personnel items one through three.
Second.
It's been moved to second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I do, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, for the insurance for the 2026 year, I first wanted to start off by just thanking the commission, the
of course, the commission, but also the insurance committee, who really did their due diligence this year by meeting twice, because we had a couple of things come down to the wire, and we were literally scrambling until Thursday to make sure that this would all come through for today's meeting. I'm very appreciative that they make sure that their departments know kind of what's going on and get the feedback from them, so we really know that this is the right decision for the entire county. That's very important, and I'm very grateful that Sam decided to come with us this year. So that was a good good addition to our team. So for medical insurance, the committee would like to recommend the commission approve staying with PEHP this year. It is a high deductible health care plan with an HSA component. The renewal rate for PEHP is an increase of premiums in the amount of 9.7%. In the initial quote from PHP, it came in at 11.9 and was negotiated down after being sent to carriers for bid. Select Health bid on our plan and came in at a 5% originally, but realized that our prescription benefit package with PHP was better and increased their bid to nearly 8%, with three prescriptions for some of our employees that were not included on the list at all, so they would have had to have gone to a different prescription. So they elected that PHP would be better, even if it is a little bit higher of a bid, just so we did not offset some of those employees' basically livelihoods. So the premium monthly rates are below there. Our original premium rates for a single party is $707.72 for the 2025 year. A two party is $1,464.98, and a family plan is $1,981.60, and that's per month. And the increase for the 2026 year, total cost for the increase is $316,762. It increases the single party to $776.36, a two party $1,607.08, and the family plan $2,173.82. And also for the HSA component, the IRS stipulated that the 2026 limits have increased from $1,650 to $1,700 per year. And for historical reference, we kind of just put down there the prior years, just so you know where we sat. We ran really low comparatively with national average for a lot of years until last year. We had a couple of really high claims and costs for employees. We had some pretty sick individuals that we really wanted to take care of, and it reflected on the cost on that. But then the insurance committee also elected and to propose to you guys the use of $200,000 from our prior self-funded bank account to offset the costs of this year's premium, with the remaining to be used on another high-quoted year. So that can be used. It's about $150,000 left in that bank account that we can use at a prior year or a coming up year.
We have about $350,000 in there now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if that's something that you would like to do to kind of offset that, it will help for the beginning of the year for other
that
items.
Offset, will 200 offset all of the increase? Or
what's that?
Will it offset all of the increase?
Not all of it. It will offset all but like 150. No, actually 116.72.
Okay.
Thanks. Yeah. So that won't be as high as. But last year was incredibly high, so I'm grateful that it wasn't that high this year. The insurance committee elected to keep our dental plan, which is EMI, and our vision plan VSP with a 2.2% increase. It's really pennies on the dollar per month, and our employees pay a portion of that. The life insurance LTD and AD&D, currently life insurance, those are with Equitable, and we've proposed to switch to New York Life for these services. The accidental critical illness and hospital indemnity, we go with MetLife, and we've elected to continue with that for those services. And Carrie can, am I good so far? I just wanted to make sure. Okay. So I'm just, again, so grateful that we had some really good employees that understand the difficulty to make this decision. And it's hard every year, but I'm just grateful that everything kind of came in smoothly, and we were able to get these numbers to you for consideration and hopefully approval. And if you have any questions, please let me know.
Any questions?
I don't have any questions. I talked to a couple of different members of the committee throughout the process. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate their work and consideration. I know one that one at least had to cut some leave time short to be back to the meeting, and yeah. I appreciate him taking that serious. Also, you know, I'm glad that we had that little reserve, and I think it's a really good idea to leave some in that reserve in case we come up against this.
Definitely.
You know, really, that $116,000 increase is minimal from what it really could be.
Very
and
true.
I'm grateful for their work and bringing that to us. That's really helpful to me, at least, mm-hmm. not to have to digest all of this
a lot
during the process. I really appreciate that committee.
Yeah, thank you very much for your efforts in this and
yeah.
trying to maintain that as cost effective as possible.
I'll entertain a motion for item number four under nine.
So I'll move for approval of item number 4A, prescription. Good night. I move for approval of employee insurance benefits package for the 2026 plan year as presented by Jennifer and recommended by our insurance committee.
Second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.
All right. County board, seems like we had something.
We do have an issue on the county board. Trish, you're here. Do you want to, as long as you're here, do you want to fill us in?
Harris, I'm David Johnson's assistant for Iron County Sioux City Economic Development. So for the Iron County Economic Advisory Board, we have Mike Blake sitting on that. We have to have a county representative on the board, but it can't be Mike, we found out, because he's a county commissioner and he has to approve this stuff. So we were proposing Luke Little on that board. So that's why we are here, just to find out if we can make that switch.
Is there going to be any other conflicts because Luke's an employee?
No, the conflict.
Elected employee.
And this hasn't been a conflict. They kind of changed the rules this year. So there's some grant funding and stuff that comes through GOEO, the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity. It's a technicality because this is an advisory board that makes recommendation to the commission for approval. Now there's a problem with me being on that board and making that recommendation to myself to approve it. Basically what this is going to do is get me out of a meeting and sucker Luke into a meeting. No, there's not going to be any conflict or I think
it has to be somebody in the county. So
has to be a county official.
I think
official.
You probably owe Luke a Mountain Dew or something.
Well, yeah. It's a pretty painless assignment. I mean, there's some work to it at grant time, but it's really a cool process to be involved in and get to know some, you know, local small business. And it's just a really good group. It's not going to change my responsibilities with economic development. And it'll just be that one meeting that Luke will have to go to instead of me. So. Mm.
So do we need to vote on that, or is it?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah, I would suggest Commissioner
Blake,
that you make the motion.
Yeah, so I'll just move for approval of Luke Little to be the new Iron County representative on the Economic Development Advisory Board.
Second that motion.
Moved to second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tricia.
Any other issues with boards? I can't think of any.
I don't have any.
Do we have a closed session today?
No. No. Jared is, again, in Albuquerque, but he would like to maybe have a discussion about computer security, internet security, but it needs to be a closed session. There's some technical bits that we're not going to
share
with the public.
That's understood.
But he's had family stuff keeping him away. So.
Okay. All right. Seeing no other issues to discuss, Chair declares this meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Awesome.